Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin', to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
In this episode, we meet characters, artists, and even go underground in Lightning Ridge.
Lightning Ridge is part of Walgett Shire in the far northwest of New South Wales, just south of the Queensland border. It's home to the world's most valuable black opal. The story of how Lightning Ridge got its name is varied. However, many of the stories agree that in the 1870s, a shepherd working on one of the early pastoral leases was bringing a flock of sheep along a stock route from Angledool Station to Walgett when hundreds of his sheep were struck by lightning and killed. He was supposedly sheltering on the stony ridge, which is surrounded by black soil plains, when the storm hit. It is thought that the ridge, which contains ironstone, may have attracted the lightning strike, and the name Lightning Ridge stuck. Lightning Ridge is in Yuwalari people's country, closely related to the Gamilaroi language.
My name is Kelly Tushla, and I live in Lightning Ridge, and I am in the process of opening a shop in the main street. My shop will be called Enlightening Ridge Opal Queen Emporium, and it is a crystal and opal and just a general wellness shop. The whole idea about having a space out here which is promoting crystals over opals is that not everybody who comes to Lightning Ridge, you know, is necessarily chasing an opal, and we get a lot of people who are interested in all types of rocks and minerals. And I've always loved crystals and the energies in which are with the crystals, and I just wanted to bring something a little bit different to my community. Lightning Ridge is a very special place. It has some beautiful energy around it, and it's also a magnet where it attracts very much eclectic people to the area. So the healing here is quite different to what you might find on the coast. It's very much earth-based, and it's very much an area where you can just sort of come here and slot in or don't slot in. You can be involved in the community as much as you want, but you can also have a beautiful opportunity to live very close to nature if you choose to live out on the camps or in the claims. And the beautiful energy from the ridge is quite spectacular because it is the home of the black opal and the best opal in the world. I grew up out on the opal fields. My family were opal miners and they were hobby opal miners. So I think I was 6 weeks old when I landed out at the Glengarry Opal Fields, and I just absolutely loved it. I loved the free-spirited life. You know, we had no electricity, no running water, dirt floor, and we just got up to so much fun and probably mischief. But it was a really great way to get really close to nature and the earth, and yeah, absolutely loved it. I was really blessed to be born in the time that I was, and actually living out on the opal fields, it was pretty magical, actually. So on my mother's side, I am First Nations, and then on my father's side, I am Celtic and Norse. So my grandfather's Swedish. So I've got this
Norse, so I love runes, all that sort of stuff, and that. And then my Celtic side, and then my Indigenous side. So I blend a lot of that through my practices. Well, I was born into it. I believe for me that it was always part of who I am. So for me, witchcraft has a very bad name. And when I proclaim myself as a witch and I step forward as a witch, a lot of people, they've got a real fear about the word witch. But I'm like, they didn't burn witches back in the day. They burnt women. They also pitted women against women. You know, all you had to do was feel a little bit insecure and you saw another beautiful woman or any woman looking at your husband and then she's gone, she's a witch. And then all of a sudden, women were being burnt for all reasons. But they should have burnt the man that burnt us. They should have feared that, not the word witch. Being a witch means that you will not take crap from anybody, and you will certainly do good, no harm to any person or any being. You will respect the land, nature, and the cycles of life. Everything goes in ebbs and flows. To acknowledge the Sabbats and to really dive deep into what it means to be part of the feminine, but also supporting other women as well, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, our ancestors. When you actually acknowledge yourself as a witch, it sort of sorts a lot of people out straight off the bat. And if people have got a, you know, problem with the word witch, well, just go and do a bit of reading, a little bit of educating, and come back and have a chat. I'm more than happy to chat to people about it.
Kelly's beautiful shop in Lightning Ridge, Outback Opal Queen Emporium, is on Marilla Street and open by appointment.
Next, let's go underground on tour at the Chambers of the Black Hand.
So the concept for the old timers coming out to the ridge was essentially find a spot, dig a hole until you hit the bottom. Well, how deep's the bottom of the hole?
That's what I'm saying.
5 foot down, 100 foot down, anywhere in between. Dig till you hit it. Pick, shovel, hammer, chisel. Grit, perseverance, for sure. The bottom of the hole is when the sand stops and the clay starts. You got that nice red burnt sand down the bottom there, but that is the distinct changeover point. There's the sand, there's the clay. According to the old timers, the opal's going to be in the top 12 inches of that clay. All right, so essentially, extreme weathering has created a wonderful silica-rich solution from the sands above. This sand is chock-a-block loaded with silica, and our opal is an amorphous form of hydrated silica. It's a blob of silica and a little bit of water. That's it, solidified over time. Silica-rich gel, taking the path of least resistance, inertia is responsible for the deposit of our opal. That path of least resistance having been formed by the already occurring natural movement in the ground. As opal miners, we're chasing major faults, where the ground has faulted, where there is a large slip and essentially an avenue. A lot of these large faults go from the surface down to the artesian basin, about 1.2k down. They've tried ground penetrating radar and all that, but essentially from the surface they can determine when the sand stops and the clay starts because of the density. But trying to find the concentrations of opal, it's like looking for salt in a bag of salt. You're looking for that specific grain in there, it just doesn't work. Prospecting, everyone that made over $1 million in the mid 70s was on the back of a 9-inch prospecting drill because that's when the drills came. The drills came so there was a boom. Because you and old mate don't have to dig a hole for 4 months to find out if there's no opal. You pay a contractor and they can drill 10, 20 holes for you, 50 holes in the week. It's going to cost you a couple of grand, but you'll probably find some opal as well and then dig it all out.
Is that what a lot of those
little white piles of dirt?
Are? Yeah.
Little piles of dirt about that big. They're a typical 9-inch exploration. If you've got a large mound of dirt, that's probably a mining shaft that's been backfilled. Okay. Don't crawl on them. Because a lot of the time, the miners can be bothered filling it with dirt, so they'll put an old car bonnet on it and pile the dirt on top. Car bonnet rusts out, people go specking and yeah, falls down. So yeah, be mindful if you're on the fields having a bit of a spec. So open cutting, they do a little bit of your lunatic hill open cut from here. That was originally dug out in the 1920s. It was called lunatic hill because our four lunatics hand sunk a 90-foot vertical shaft all the way through, taking months and months and months. Now, once you sink your hole, if you don't land on opal, well, you dig another hole. So, but they landed on opal and it was everywhere. And I'll tell you what, that hole over there is easily over $100 million worth of opals come out of there, probably more, probably closer to that half a billion mark because people have been digging it for a century. There was one stone on the Western Fall. It still holds the world record for the largest uncut black opal knobby. It's not very good colour, but it's still a $2 million rock. And that was one of the thousands of stones that came out of there. So in the right spot, the sky's the limit. Finding that right spot, you're probably not accepted, and off you go open mining. Doing what you can do on the side to bring in the bucks to maintain that open mining addiction. So hard industry, bloody oath, but get in the right spot at the right time, and all of a sudden it's the easiest thing you've ever done. Over 9 millionaires.
So it becomes an obsession.
It does. Addiction. It does. It does. Because when you do see that colour in the wall, and we've seen it, a lot of it hasn't paid off, but it looked pretty underground. Bang, the endorphins, that hit of adrenaline. I mean, it is. It puts you onto a high. There's some people talking about when they've actually found hordes of gem opal and they couldn't sleep for days. The adrenaline was just still kicking through. They're just dreaming of all this ridiculous colour that they just previously dug out. So, I mean, it's a town full of dreamers as well. So when those dreams come true for them, some people certainly do get excited. But that's why we do it. That little bit there, underground, oh, you better believe. Bells are ringing. We're getting excited. We're going to punch it in, chase it out, dig, wash process. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, dig a load, wash a load. Leave Saturday for the load to soak or to wash, and then Sunday, fun day, we tail it out. We're going through all of those tailings to see if we've got any decent opal, and if we've got some nice stuff, we know where to pick up where we left off. But that's what will do it to you. Not in the 20s, but hey, 2024, nice blue-green on the black, $3,500 to $4,000 per carat. 5 carats in a gram, that's $20,000 per gram for a nice common opal that would have been thrown away 100 years ago. At a recent auction, 10 carat stone sold for $450,000. $45,000 per carat, that's nearly $250,000 per gram. I really want to see that stone just for reference to see what justifies that bloody price, but that's almost double the upper echelon price that we're dreaming to get. So it must have been a very, very special stone. But where there's some, there's more. I just imagine that pocket that they got that $45,000 carat material out of. It's incredible.
Meet local artist Tanya, who is opening her art gallery in 2025.
I'm Tanya Henry. Moved back here to Lightning Ridge 4 years ago to look after my dad and that, and then start a gallery. Yeah, come up here to Lightning Ridge in 1972, I think it was. So I was only about nearly 2 years old. Moved to Nobby's Hill, or Kangaroo Hill, they call it now. Lived there for a bit, and then we moved out to the Corcoran. And then there was the big 74 floods, so couldn't sort of get into town. That made life a bit harder, so Dad decided we'd move a bit closer into Lightning Ridge. So we ended up out at the 7 Mile, where he's lived for about 48 years, something like that it was. Yeah, just grew up here in the ridge, you know. Well, back in the day, we had horses, so a lot of horse riding. We had old cars, so we, you know, did a lot of driving and paddy bashing, whatever they call it. I was going to school, and then I ended up doing correspondence for a year, and then I just went opal mining with my dad, and yeah, we found opal. So it was, yeah, good. Found a lot of opal back in the day. So because we had no money at the start, so we had like an old wingless, and so dad would go down and I'd be up the top, and when he had enough dirt, you know, fill the bucket up, and I wound the bucket up. And then later on, I'd go down there jackhammering or with a pick. We'd work with a pick and shovel. And then, yeah, when we got opal and that, then we, yeah, you know, jackhammers and stuff like that. I was always on the jackhammer and shoveling and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, pretty hard work back in the day. And now I think about it, the heat in the summer here was very hot. And, like, you know, back then, you know, I grew up with no air con, no fan, nothing, basically. We only had the one rainwater tank, and then, you know, I used to just use a, what do you call it, face washer, wet that, and you just sort of, or put a wet towel over you to keep cool at night. Then you had the mosquitoes, and, yeah, it's pretty full on. Like, I've lived in brand new houses, I've lived in flats, and I've lived in camps a lot of my life. I've lived in like nearly a palace, and I always sort of come back to this. I think I just love the basic living, simple living. I think it is. It's just so laid back, the freedom. If you're basically just on Opal all the time, you got to sort of work every day, but then you sort of got to have a job to keep the fuel or breakdowns or things like that, you know. I think it's the challenge. I love the challenge. I don't know. That's me anyway. When Dad was down, you know, digging the dirt and that, I'd get bored waiting. So I started drawing, like just had little sketchbooks and just started drawing stuff. And like when we've got the money, when Dad, we found the opal, so Dad went bought me a heap of boards and more like big packets of, you know, oil colours. He said, just get into it, girl. You've got a talent there. Start painting. And I said, righto. So, yeah, and then I started painting with oils and learnt how to do, you know, with oils. And then, yeah, I sort of just kept going and, yeah, just landscapes. I was painting me horses, everything. And then, you know, me Indigenous stuff, because my mum was Aboriginal. So, yeah, I got into sort of like me culture side of stuff too with my art. And, yeah, it just sort of took off from there. And I've just been sort of painting on and off over the years. Sue Harris, yeah, she helped me a lot with stuff and ideas, techniques, especially, you know, the stuff with perspective and getting your eye in for stuff and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was pretty good. Ended up going to uni in Geelong. We did a Bachelor of Arts, and I ended up doing me honours at the start because we had to fly, and I don't like aeroplanes. And it was very scary. Oh, the first flight, I think we got on a plane out of here, Lightning Ridge, was an 8-seater. Not very fond of small planes. But the bigger planes I got used to. Three girls from Lightning Ridge got picked. So there was me, Eve Brown, and Joanna Parker. We got picked, us three girls. So, yeah, we were the Ridge girls at uni. Yep. Well, I want to open this gallery. I'm going to call it Free Spirit. And I want to set up at the back, like ceramics as well, then have a big open area at the back because I've got a huge big table. Set it up for, you know, maybe workshops down the track for, you know, get someone in, I guess, to do weaving or even pottery or just different stuff. And then have the gallery just for my own work. You know, I'd even like just someone to come in, not even about art, even like doing stuff with bush medicine or just because I love all that sort of stuff. Come in and, you know, we'll just have like a morning there. We'll all just sit there and yarn about stuff and share our knowledge and whatever. And there's no Indigenous, there's no outlet here for sort of stuff, or there's nothing here. And I work at the bowling club, Lightning Ridge Bowling Club, and I'm on reception, and, you know, I get a lot of people asking, where can I get some Indigenous or Aboriginal work? And I'm just like, well, there's no one really here painting. And I just thought, oh, well, it's a good opportunity and I might be able to influence some other artists or young kids or around here too, just to start painting and do stuff. because there was a lot of interest in it.
Charlie Nettleton, a miner from Whitecliffs opal field, saw the potential in the black opal. In 1903, he and Murray gathered some opal and walked to Whitecliffs to sell the first parcel of stones to buyers. In 1905, an opal field was officially opened on Bindarina pastoral lease, a station near Lightning Ridge. This began the rush to Lightning Ridge area, where miners from Whitecliffs moved north, joined by shearers on their off-season. A newspaper article from 1910 described the social life as the occasional travelling circus that was well attended at a cost of 2 shillings per person, card games and drafts, and mostly men sat around fires at night telling stories and singing. Famous opals with romantic names like Light of the World, Flame Queen, Pandora, which have come from Lightning Ridge, reflect an international business which is still important. It has been a multicultural town of many different languages.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.